CFO who's acting director general today. And let me also indicate that as normally I'm going to ask the, I'll just keep the CFO and just quickly go directly into requesting the chairperson of the board to introduce your team and let's get the presentation from CRPG.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. On my right is the CEO, Mr. Sipho Khumalo. I am the chairperson of the board, Ken Sukane, and on my left is the CFO, Mr. Mayekwan. The CEO will give us a presentation on the strategy. The strategy aims in the next 5 years to focus on more towards impact, greater impact in facilitating unimpeded flow of goods and passengers across our borders, but more importantly, it's across the entire corridor for economic benefit as well as public value. Internally, it begins to focus us on the sustainability of the agency as well as the improvement of internal efficiency. So I'll hand over to the CEO to present. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues from the GRC and colleagues from sister entities, good morning. We will present this strategic plan of the CDRC 2015-2020 by covering firstly the mandates of the CDRC. Daily to say why was the CDRC established, what are the core functions. We will then go into the strategic draft and what informs the strategic draft. We'll touch briefly on the presidential priorities, the 9-point plan presented by the President during the recent State of the Nation address and how that impacts on what we do as CDRC. We'll then go into government policies and priorities, cover the strategy itself, the risk to the strategy, and some key issues pertaining to the finances of the CDRC. This is essentially the table of contents here, which covers the areas that I've already mentioned. And maybe just to talk about the mandates of the CDRC. Chairperson, the CDRC was established primarily to ensure that there is an unimpeded flow of freight and passengers between South Africa and her neighboring countries. And sometimes we find that we need to explain ourselves when it comes to this concept of unimpeded flow. It essentially speaks to the removal of impediments for those things that cause delays at the border posts along the corridors. And our reason for existence is to work with other entities or other players within the border environment to ensure that those impediments or those non-tariff barriers that are a cause for delays on the border posts are removed systematically over time without, of course, sacrificing the integrity of the country from a security point of view. We're currently talking about these attacks that are happening on foreign nationals on our land. Part of the reason why this is so, without condoning it, has to do with the fact that we have huge quantities of what we call border jumpers, or people who come to the country illegally. And indeed, when you have that influx that is uncontrolled, it does create its own problem. And what we really need to be doing is to be systematic in terms of how do we regulate the movement of people across our borders without closing our borders, but making sure that we can account for everyone who enters our country so that indeed the facilities and the capabilities of the country can handle this inflow. Secondly, say we established to introduce regulated competition in passenger transport. What regulated competition speaks to is to ensure that there is a balance between the supply and demand of provision of services, passenger services between South Africa and our neighboring countries. The legal instruments that govern our working environment dictate that we need to accord the same treatment that we give to South African operators to our foreign operators. So if, for instance, we give 50 licenses for Zimbabwean bus operators to come into South Africa, Zimbabwe in turn will be required to give the same number of licenses from South Africa to operators coming from South Africa into Zimbabwe. So this is really how you regulate this competition and ensure that you do not end up with an oversupply of operators on any particular corridor, but also to ensure that there is always a balance between what we do domestically and what we do in respect to our neighbors. We also exist to reduce operational constraints, and the question could be asked, what are these operational constraints? There's a number of constraints that face operators, Shepherdson, and our job is really to systematically, again, working in partnership with our counterparts in the other countries in the region to systematically work at ensuring that we create seamlessness and we reduce these operational constraints that make it impossible or difficult for the operators to run their businesses at a profitable basis. Part of the commitment we made in the SADC protocol on transport, communication and technology was that we would also work at liberalizing market access, particularly for freight movement. This actually speaks to ensuring that over time we make it easier and easier, and we actually work towards an environment where there will be no permits required for the movement of freight, so that we enable the regional, the integration of the entire African continent and the free movement of vehicles across the entire continent. Of course, there's a lot that must happen before we get to that point, but we are systematically in all these engagements we have, both at the Joint Commission level and at the Joint Route Management Group level, working systematically at achieving this. At a recent meeting during the visit by the President of Zimbabwe in South Africa, which is just a few weeks ago, we had a bilateral meeting with the Minister of Transport of Zimbabwe. And we're talking specifically about these areas of what are the things that Zimbabwe needs to remove on their side, because a lot has been done on our side, but to the extent that there are all these impediments on the Zimbabwean side, it still means that the trucks, even though they are able to move quickly on South African side, they still get stuck on the Zimbabwean side, which then neutralizes the benefits of all the efforts that we've put into place. And we also exist to enhance the public sector capacity in respect to strategic planning and to empower the cross-border road transport industry in general. Shepherdson, the core functional areas of the CBRC, we've covered this ground before, but I'll quickly run through this. We exist to advise the minister in respect to ensuring that there's reciprocity and any unfair treatment that is meted to South African operators and passengers in any of our neighboring countries, that we're able to counteract that restrictive measures as a country. In terms of facilitation, we develop partnerships with our SADC counterparts, and we foster positive working relationships aimed at improving the facilitation and the movement of people and goods between our country and theirs. In terms of law enforcement, we monitor the carrier in respect to adherence to the laws and the conditions that go with the permits that we issue to them. And in respect of regulation, we are responsible for the issuing and managing the processes pertaining to cross-border permits. This one is just to give you a sense of the structure, Shepherdson, the organogram of the agency at a high level. This is how we are structured. I will not cover this in detail, but I'll move on to the strategic draft. Shepherdson, we do not exist in a vacuum. We are a creature of statutes, but we also exist within a policy environment. In this respect, our strategy is informed by the National Development Plan and its imperatives in respect to matters of regional integration and what it dictates in respect to the relationship that South Africa wants to forge between South Africa and their neighbors. The State of the Nation address, including the presidential inaugural address, which speaks to what are the priorities of government and particularly the head of state in respect to this administration. Of course, there's the medium-term strategic framework and those pieces of legislation like your SADC protocol, bilateral agreements between South Africa and their neighbors, the National Road Traffic Act, the National Land Transport Act, and the Cross-Border Road Transport Act, which are actually the pieces of legislation that dictate what we may or may not do, and the minister's delivery agreement with the president. So we really need to distill out of all these, what is it that speaks to our area of operation, and to then say how do we respond in a meaningful way towards the strategic direction that is founded on these feeders. Recently, the president, in the recent State of the Nation address, outlined a 9-point plan. Not everything in the 9-point plan speaks to what we do as CBRCA, but we need to be mindful of what the priorities of government are, so that whatever we do with respect to our own area, there is resonance, and we ensure that where there are issues coming from the 9-point plan that have a bearing on what we do, we also distill those and we respond. And in this respect, these areas, moderating workplace conflict, we have a role to play in this respect in terms of ensuring that we have good relations with our own unions. The biggest union in our environment is Popcrew, and we maintain very cordial and working relations with that union. Locking the potential of SMEs, cooperatives, and townships and rural enterprises. And this, most of our border towns are actually located in rural parts of our country, and we have a responsibility of ensuring that we support the development of those rural towns and enable those rural towns to take advantage of the existence of the border posts and opportunities for logistics and support in those towns, and the potential of SMEs in those small towns. And of course, there is the whole issue of boosting the role of the state-owned companies, and as a public entity ourselves, we view ourselves as being part of this and ensuring that we develop the necessary capacity that to ensure the viability. And operation of Pakita, of course, which is aimed at growing the ocean economy, which also touches on what we do in respect to the ports, as we are an entity that ensures that which emanates from our ports is able to traverse freely as it goes north, particularly on the north-south corridor. What are the key priorities coming from the Minister's Delivery Agreement? Decent employment, efficient, competitive, and responsive infrastructure, rural development, the protection of our environmental assets, and the National Development Plan, speaking to implementation of regional integration strategy, capacity building of the state-owned enterprises, and capacity building of staff at all levels. All of us need to be responding to this. Now, as an agency, how are we responding now that we've given you this in terms of our pillars and what are the issues that underpin what we do? So first, in here is the strategic window of the CDRCA. You'd know that pre-2010, the CDRCA was in a dire state. In fact, at one stage, this committee referred to us as being an entity that was in an ICU. We worked very hard at rebuilding the foundations and capacitating the agency. And we believe that up to 2014-15 was the last year where we say we're still working at rebuilding the foundation and the capacity. Our strategic window going forward speaks to how do we begin to add public value in respect to responding to the imperatives of our operators. And this is where we articulate where we want to go. And this speaks to how do we respond to the heightened demand for customer responsive strategies. How do we ensure that the substantive value adds? How do we ensure that the agency itself operationally is viable and is able to take care of itself? And legitimate and political sustainability in respect to driving both the foreign policy of our government, but also the imperative of integrating the African continent and ensuring that we actually see Africa as a whole as one economic driving force from which as a country we can benefit. Some of the issues emanating from the operating environment, there is a heightened demand for customer responsive strategy and subdued economic growth. We know that as a country, we're battling to even go beyond 2% growth at the moment. The present global economic recovery since the 1999 recession, and that businesses up to now are not investing in long-term growth. This provides the context within which we operate, and it has a direct bearing on what is happening in respect to those industries that are doing exports and imports, which is the environment in which we are operating. Jefferson, this one is just to give you a sense of where the key corridors and where those border posts are located. It's very important to have a sense of this geographically, and you would also understand why we have 7 regional offices which are located along these major corridors, and therefore ensuring that we are able to service each of the corridors and the border posts that are located there. As in that level. And really this then speaks to us driving this strategy of being, ensuring that the wheels of operators and the wheels of the economy are kept moving, and that in this corridor we reduce all those factors that impact negatively on the ability of the operators to be able to run viable and profitable businesses, but also the need to improve operator and passenger value, not just from an operator point of view, but also from the passenger side, and to broaden the revenue base of the agency as part of the need to integrate the regulatory environment in which we operate. So this is the rationale for our strategy, Chairperson, as articulated there, that we have this responsibility to ensure that cross-border corridors have a value chain focus, that our focus goes beyond the border, and that we improve operator and passenger value, and we broaden the revenue base, and we drive regional integration on behalf of the South African government. The key pillar is operator value add, impact-driven operator forums, regulatory services, elevation of the role of profiling, vehicle examination, and government-wide industry partnership development plan. What are the some of the new initiatives, Chairperson? What is it that we want to do that's new that we've not been doing before? One is the issue of reciprocity. Chairperson, you remember that when we were here, we said our operators are subjected to a plethora of restrictive measures in some of our neighboring countries. When you go to the SADC protocol, it provides for reciprocity. So for everywhere where we're faced with a restrictive measure, we have a duty and a responsibility of ensuring that we reciprocate as a country. I've used the example of cabotage in Namibia. That Namibia would not let a South African operator do cabotage within Namibia. But in South Africa, up to now, we have allowed Namibian operators to do cabotage. Not in a negative spirit, Chairperson, but in the spirit of fairness, we've also had to restrict Namibians from being able to do cabotage in South Africa. And this is one example of reciprocity. But there's many other areas, Chairperson. For instance, our operators continue to be subjected to the payment of cross-border charges when they cross to Zimbabwe and many of our neighboring countries. Yet their operators, when they come to South Africa, they don't pay for cross-border charges. That creates an unbalanced and unfair environment where the South African operators' cost of doing business are higher than that of their counterparts coming from these countries, and we have a responsibility for reciprocity in this regard. We'll be approaching the committee with details, Chairperson, of all the areas that we've identified. We've taken country by country to say what are the restrictive measures that these countries are imposing on us, and we would want the support of this committee, Chairperson, in ensuring that we develop countermeasures. Firstly, these countries will be warned in the spirit of cooperative engagement that South African operators have been subjected to A, B, C, and D, which your own operators are not subjected to. We're giving you an opportunity to take corrective action, and if you fail to do so, we'll be left with no option but for us to protect, which is exactly what the SADC protocol provides for. There's a second challenge, which speaks to integrated regulatory framework. This one finds a manifestation in the main in the Lesotho Free State Challenge, where, for instance, the manner in which we regulate the movement of movements of taxis between one province and another, and the manner in which we regulate the movement of taxis between South Africa and our next country, in this particular case, Lesotho. There is no integrated mechanism there, which allows certain people to be doing what is called double dipping, which has resulted in a number of problems and challenges we're experiencing on those corridors, particularly on your Free State corridors. Our strategic response to the person, instead of focusing that on the conflict, is to say the conflict is a manifestation, it's a symptom of a deeper problem. The deeper problem is really this fact that we do not have an integrated regulatory framework and an environment that allows us to be able to know what's happening at an interprovincial level and how what is happening at an interprovincial level impacts on and is impacted on what's happening on international level. So we're responding in this way in terms of the regulatory framework that we will be setting up. Chairperson, the one of levying of cross-border charges, I've already covered this to some extent. We're really going in a big way on this. Firstly, helping us to ensure that we balance the playing field, but secondly, from the revenue point of view, Chairperson, this is a possible stream for cross-border to be able to levy those cross-border charges and to reduce the burden on South African operators that are currently paying for our sustaining our existence through permit fees. The other one, Chairperson, is what we call a base and border modernization initiative. And maybe just to give you a brief background on this one, Chairperson. On the 15th of June in 1994, a new bridge was built by a private company called New Bridge Company in Limpopo. This new bridge was built on a principle called build, operate, transfer. So for 20 years, this company was running and operating this bridge, and this bridge was sold, and all the money accrued were being given to this company. Last year on the 16th June, it was after 20 years. So this build, operate, transfer, a 20-year arrangement. This bridge was then handed over back to the South African government and the Zimbabwean government. In other words, this company moved out of the space. Now the responsibility was left to us and our Zimbabwean counterpart to now then solve this breach and share the revenue. Unfortunately, at the time in South Africa, we were not ready with taking the administrative responsibility of taking over this role. So at the meeting that was there, where the handover meeting, it was agreed that Zimbabwe will be the only one who holds the bridge, and they will take all the revenue and will give us 6 months within which we'll get ourselves ready as a country to come and claim our share, which is 50% of the tolling fee there. Unfortunately, the takeover was supposed to be the 1st of April, and the 1st of April came, and we still haven't taken advantage of this. This is a huge opportunity, Chairperson, as we see it, firstly to ensure that we can develop that precinct, that old Musina precinct and the border precinct, and there's huge improvements that are needed there. And we cannot allow a situation where 350 million is taken by Zimbabwe, which is due to South Africa. And there is no basis why Zimbabwe is doing it, either than that administratively we fail to get our act together. So as cross-border, even though this is not squarely within our mandate, we've engaged the minister on this initiative, and the minister has said, come with a plan, come with a proposal, and unfortunately the minister has also asked the same of Sandra. So we just need to make sure that we synchronize our actions with Sandra so that we don't step on each other's toes, but we see this as a huge opportunity for us to accept. And this will go a long way towards helping us with our funding challenges as an agency. The last one is this request for the annual state of cross-border operations report that we need to be presenting. We are ready, and for the first time this year, we'll be able to present this. The idea with this annual state of cross-border operations report is to be able to track progress, because all the interventions we're making there, if we do not have a before and an after scenario, it becomes very difficult for us to prove to a naysayer about the interventions and the changes we've brought about in this environment. But once we start producing this report on an annual basis, we are then able to keep track of progress that we are making and to be able to show that at this time, at some point in last year, these were some of the challenges which are no longer in place because of the following interventions that we have brought to bear. So this is important for us, as it will also enable us to demonstrate the value that we're adding to both our operators but also to the country. Chairperson, in terms of risks, the key one is really the ongoing litigation. We reported on the issue of our permit service that we challenged. The matter, it went all the way to constitutional court. It was heard at constitutional court level. We are currently awaiting the final determination of the constitutional court. If it's adverse, Chairperson, it will really render it in a serious challenge, because it would mean that we have a financial obligation of 356 million to pay back to operators, amount of money that we do not have. But if the judgment is favorable, then of course the amount of money that we owe to operators is reduced to 37 million, which we can handle safely. So as I'm saying, Chairperson, this one is just a risk issue that we are flagging, because this could render the agency in a financial position where we'll be technically insolvent, in the sense that we'll be owing more than the total value of our assets. Hence, this will sensitize the minister about this matter, and the minister has also sensitized the Minister of Finance about this. So they are aware of this as a contingent liability that's facing us, but we just felt that we need to flag this so that the committee is also mindful of it. Another one, Chairperson, is this unsustainable business model. We really, really do not believe, Chairperson, that the manner in which we are funding our operations is sustainable, and we believe that we really need to start in a very serious way as part of the financial sustainability strategy that you presented to yourself to activate alternative revenue streams. You know, we all know that we are currently funded through a permit revenue as the sole form of funding, and that there are these alternative funding models that and alternative revenue streams that we need to look at. And there's this issue of also the adjustments of our tariffs on an annual basis to avoid a situation where you have a huge leap again, which could render us into a new round of litigation. And the containment of cost, of course, goes with that. So, at this point, I would just ask the CFO to actually take us through the MTF budget, our operating expenses per division, and so on. I don't know if you need to move my mic.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the committee, colleagues from the DOT and other entities. Our budget really in terms of revenue, as the CEO indicated, we are primarily funded by permit fee. In the year 2015-16 is almost 83% of our total income. The other stream that we are looking at, there is really not a stream, but in terms of where we penalize the operators for not complying with the Act, CFTA Act and other acts that we are enforcing, and there is penalties from law enforcement. In the first year, we're looking at 35 million in terms of revenue, constituting about 15% of our total income. The other income that we have from the year 16-17 really is in terms of the hope that the revenue, the financial sustainability strategy will be implemented. We're looking at the few indicators, the cross-border charges, we're looking at the Bay Bridge modernization project, we're looking at the other things that we've also covered in our financial sustainability strategy. So the expenditure in terms of the different land functions in terms of how they are, how we are structured, is facilitation and industry at 19 million in the first year. Is RTI, that is really the key cost driver, that is law enforcement, the key cost driver of our operations in terms of law enforcement at 83 million, going to the next year, 104 million and 111 in the other year. Regulatory in terms of the issuance of permits, they are at 25 million in the first year, growing marginally in the NTF. The Office of the CEO really that is looking at a consolidating strategy, really moving operations as well. 22 million in the first year, growing marginally in the NTF. The administrative budget is 89 million. It looks like it's a huge budget, but it really houses a number of functions there. One is the governance unit. We also have the Office of the CEO residing there. The human resource and IT also sit in this administration. And IT really is also more of a core function in the sense that we're looking at the permit system that is really a driver of business. So it's not necessarily that the administration seems to be good. There are also elements of core business that are actually residing in there. You can look at that. The next slide really is just in terms of the split of the different applications, compensation for employees, currently at 60%. The highest cost driver, we are in the main service organization, at 60% compensation of employees. Our goods and services are currently sitting at 27%. And then, of course, we have got your depreciation that is about 2% of the total, and we also have CAPEX that is mainly for other indicators for fleet. It's also for the payment system that we are developing in the next financial year. Going forward, we can go to the next one. That is just the split of the administrative budget, that 89 million that we are reflecting. In terms of the split of the different units that are spending in administration, finance, that is 2,000 staff, operating cost 16 million. That is basically a number of items that are centralized there together with HR. We have got your leases, you have got your signal and all those centralized activities. Under CAPEX finance, is also the payment system as indicated, and of course also the CEO at 12 million staff, 11 operating cost, and about 1 million in terms of CAPEX. And shall not go into this, it's just a split in terms of the different functions, in terms of staff costs and operating costs.
Thank you.
Thank you very much on time. Kasiburu was called and Honda. That's what they said. Honorable members, there we are, representation from CRTA. Honorable Sibanda, Honorable Bushier, Mulawuti, Honorable Bushier. Yeah. That way. Let me indicate before they start, CEO and Chairperson, that at least it looks like you have gotten out of the ICU. You've gotten out of the hospital, you start to walk like a normal person now. We hope like a cocktail, and then you become the what the Republic expects of you.
challenges, of course, they will be insurmountable, but it doesn't mean that we cannot, as a people, resolve those challenges which are there. And remember that critical is that we're working towards making sure that SADC issues are addressed holistically without leaving some of the things behind. And I'm happy because at least the Lesotho cross-border, we are gradually getting it right, and for sure we're working very close to the Free State province. We should be able to get everything right. But I want to impress upon us here that the Prime Minister, the then Prime Minister of Lesotho, and the President of the Republic has given us a mandate and a marching order which we cannot leave behind. We have to do what the President and the Prime Minister have said we should be able to do. And I thought that you were going to give us update to that effect as to what is progress today. Thank you.
Chairperson, first of all, I want to maybe to comment something which is very sensitive, which we have done. Thank you very much for your support during the bereavement of one of the MECs, of MEC's child, where we saw, I was supposed to say that earlier on, most of the entities, including the department, including the minister herself, they were there to support us in Malanga. Thank you very much. Keep it up in that spirit. And then also, thank you for the presentation. Yeah, Chairperson, I think there is an improvement, but nevertheless, there are some issues which we must also touch. You see, Chairperson, let me start with the minor one. Normally, there is a problem which says charity begins at home. What is the relationship among ourselves? Because in the past there was a problem in the entity. What is the relationship between the court and yourself? Because there was a problem. I won't go deeper on that one. And then also, Chairperson, there is this thing which he touched about the issue of the bridge. No. The thing is one with, which is concerning me with that bridge, and that is it headed over, and it's bringing in a lot of monies, huge monies, I believe. Reality, for how long is it going to take? Where is the problem? The problem is the problem with legislation. You know, where is the problem? Because even with legislation, it doesn't work automatically. People must be informed first that there is this challenge so that we can engage each other in order to solve and in order to have an amicable approach to deal with that matter in terms of that the resources which are generated in that bridge. And then also, which is worrying me, Chairperson, the issue Kumalo raised some of the issues about the SADC protocol. Our little experience is true. There are a lot of protocols and agreements which have been signed between South Africa and other countries, but how to take those messages to local people, whereby these people are the owners of those taxis which are making the cross-border. How do you take them on board? How often do you meet with the local taxes which are affected in the in the different provinces? Because, for an example, you go to Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga is having a challenge because it's about two borders, which is Mozambique and Swaziland. And there are problems there, you know very well. And also, in Limpopo, in Zimbabwe, etc., I can name them up until Namibia. And then, you see, Chairperson, why I'm raising those issues. In his own, the key border, in his own input about the new initiatives, about the issue of the cabotage and the border tax, are these are the key fundamental issues which were raised by the people there that South Africa doesn't, I mean, we don't protect our own people. That is the indication. Because when is this site? South Africa, we are mild. Nothing is happening. But these taxi operators from South Africa, when they arrive, for example, in Namibia, they've been charged. And South Africa, in terms of the issue of the cabotage, and then also the in terms of the border, cross border, South African taxi operators have been charged, while their own taxis are not charged this side. And then also, I wanted to find out something. If you take us on board, in which sense? What is the status quo about this taxi? Because there was a strong allegation from other in the cross border, whereby the allegation you talked about, the people from the other countries will find them queuing this site for position their taxi during our oversight visit. I saw the taxi from the Sudan there, while our taxi is the other side, which is taking profit, they are not offering at all. What is this? Because that one goes back about the SADC protocol, that how to defend our own operator. And then also, I won't go deeply, my colleagues will cover the issue of regulations and legal, that where are you, what is happening. Because what's supposed to happen, you are the ones who are in the forefront, who are supposed to update us, so that we can be able to propose to make some amendments if necessary. But if you can take us on board. And the last one, you spoke about the integrated framework. Yeah, the flow, you see the flow of people, you know. I mean, I want you to define that from a side. Two things. Number one, how often do you meet with the other departments? Because this cross-border issues, you raise a very important issue about this recent attack, of which we don't agree with it. But how often do you meet with the sister department? For example, some things they need for international and what was for the former foreign affairs, international affairs, and also the security of the country. For example, it is alleged that in most of the borders, they are syndicate gangsters which are known. For example, if you go to Zimbabwe and South Africa, they are Amakumakuma, which are helping people to cross. If you go to in Mozambique, in Mpumalanga, we have Amaninja, which are helping people to cross. If you go to Lesotho, we are having Amajita, which are helping people to cross illegally so. So, what is your role? What do you do in that regard? Because it is alleged that when they cross, they use taxis. And taxis are you the ones who give permits. And lastly, the chairperson, in the past we had a problem of taxis, whereby it is alleged that this entity is involved in giving permits. What is the remedy? How do we correct those leaking things? I'm not leaking things because they involve lives at the end. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable.
Yes, thank you. And thank you to the presentation by the CEO and also to the Chairperson of the Board, the CBRT. My question would be maybe clarity about the. There was a court order about the cross-border to the Lesotho and the department, the provincial department of the MEC, Kompela, which is like the Taxi Association, they won the court against the department, the provincial department. Maybe to clear us what is the effect to the agents. And also to update us about the long waiting appeal court processes about the permit court appeal. The issue I then want to know is about our law enforcement officers. I think they are not visible enough to our roads towards the borders. N1 on 4 road, as an example. Even if you go there, you find there's a joint operation of the law enforcement officers, like a colleague has said. You don't find the cross border law enforcement officers there. As the chairperson said about the department, the agencies like she's out of ICU. We were very vocal last time and we were asking the department why are they not finding you. So do you think it's necessary for us to continue to ask the department to assist you financially? Or you are comfortable, so it's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think also let me join my colleagues in commending the CBRT. I think we can see that there's progress in Frankfurt. I think I'm working on the bigger document, the real strategy 5-year plan. On page 2, I think the Chairperson has highlighted two things that in the CBRT environment, he's saying they should be done and very imperative. The issue of the review of the mandate of the agency and the elimination of contestations of the mandate of the agency by stakeholders. I think it will be important if you can just unpack it for us so that where possible we can be able to assist. We don't want to assume. But where we need to assist, we will assist. And then on page 7, I must commend you on this one. I think you are up to so far the entities that we have done. You are the only one who have been able to take out these environmental factors very well and clearly. You know, you were able to assess your environment, both your external and your internal environment. And from this, you are clear who needs to do what and when. And I think I've seen it only in your entity. And I would like to, it's really talking to the issues that are there. And it's very commendable, Chairperson. Yeah. On the economy side, the last but one sentence or paragraph, you mentioned about the moving of goods from the road to the rail, and correctly so. You raised a concern because it will affect all your budget and all other things. But then that's what government, all of us want to do, to remove this on the road. So I just want to know if that happens, are you ready for it? What are the measures that should be in place to deal with the issue? And then on page 9, about the regulatory and the legal frame, as my colleagues have said, I think you have raised very important issues, which some of them you have shown that if they are not attended to immediately, they will impact on your work at the agency. The issue of the regulatory standards not harmonized in the domestic and regional transport sector, and the SEDEC advocating for a single permit in the region, which will require you as the CBRT to remodel your business. And then there's also other issues, which for us as lawmakers are very key issues. I just want to know that after noting them and the seriousness that they are, what mechanisms are there in place to ensure that this will be achieved? Because for me, Chair, this is the most important part. If you don't have the regulations to deal with this, and if your business case model is not responding to what you're supposed to, you might as well close business. So for me, I would want to commend you for being able to take them out, but then from here, where do you go? It goes also to the technological side and the other side. And then on page 10, also in terms of organizational environment, I can see you have been able to take it out well, but let me take all your weaknesses. You say you are an unknown brand, poor IT infrastructure, and all those kind of things. But when you go on into your plan, I don't see how you address these weaknesses. It can't be that you just say, you know, but you don't do anything about that. At least something must be done. The good thing is you are able to identify them, but let's see action, how best do you do that. And I know with the caliber of the leadership that you have in the CDRT and with our support, you can overcome most of them. And I think the other one, which is more general because it applies to many other sections, I'll go to in particular on page 19, but it's also in some action. While you are able to deal with your mandate and your strategic goals, when you go down to the targets there, you know, somewhere either in the line, you just put a dash, you know, and then dash. So I don't know whether the dash is we end here, or the dash is still thinking, we'll come back, or the dash is, because yes, of course, planning for a 5-year term is a long term, and things can happen, which can change. Because let me give you an example. You want to, a strategic goal, strategic positioning to enhance organizational sustainability, which is good. And then your performance indicator, you want to develop financial sustainability model, which is good. And then for 2015-16, which is now, you want to conduct feasibility study on the proposed revenue system. And then next year, all of a sudden, revise the strategy. When do you implement it? You know, what do you do with it? And then after that, there's on the outer edge. You know, it's in many sections. I'm just giving you a clearing one that just come out. Some say you can't conduct a feasibility this year. And then before you even finish it and approve it and implement it and see its problem, the next year you revise it. And then the other year you dash it. You know. So it's in many areas. I think your strategy is good. You can see what you want to do. But if you can just revise some of the things so that it comes out very clearly, it will be very helpful. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bushielok. Covered a lot of things that I wanted to talk to. Probably one critical one, between yourself and Sandra, who must build the bridge-based bridge. It's very, very critical because I know for sure that Sandra is also, in terms of the toll-related matters, they would want to tap into that. It will be very, very important. But what is very important is we can't keep on procrastinating. The Republic needs that revenue which is generated from the bridge. And therefore, whoever is responsible, I think I will also task the CFO from the department that who would want that within 30 days. You should have come back to us, CFO, come back to us and give us the pointers and indicators as to who is responsible for what in terms of the toll at the Bay Bridge, so that it can be able to be operationalized as soon as is possible, because definitely we really, really need
No, I was not. I had CFO and there are two CFO.
Yeah?
There are two CFOs and I'm not in DG at
the
time, so I'm not sure.
The department.
Oh, no.
I'm not in the department.
Okay, I do not understand the CFO. Yes,
representing the DG, acting DO.
Acting DG, yes.
Acting DG. Can you, within a month, come back and indicate, because these two entities, obviously, each one of them, there's a particular mandate that they must unfold towards them executing their task.
What becomes critical is there should be directives from the department as to how they're going to be executing this task. But at the center is that the revenue has been generated. It is the revenue that has been accrued to the Republic of South Africa. That revenue has come back to the Republic. As to whether it goes to CVRCA or it goes to SANRAL, it's neither here nor there. But give directive and give direction, CFO, please, if you could. The last one from me, I said I will ask one, but I think I need to also talk to that. Your funding, your alternative funding models, would also be pleased if you can be able to be appraised as to your alternative funding model, because this one that you are having is unsustainable in Hodges. Which actually brings me to the question of if you've got 62% of your budget going to personnel expenditure, how do you see yourself maybe turning the tide in such a way that you can be able to have the opposite of that, a lot of money being accrued to your operational issues. You've spoken to the weaknesses that you're seeing within your environment as you're operating, and therefore it becomes very important that you are able to turn the tide and be able to have 62%, probably even if it's not that, but just about 50% going to operational issues than funding personnel expenditures, because the operations now are lagging behind. You've spoken to issues of ICT and other related matters. It's that those are the critical things. But if you can be able to just hear me, I know through the CEO and the chairperson of the board, I'm throwing it back to yourself, Meg.
Thank you very much, Beth, and thanks for the questions. I think just in response to a couple of questions, then I'll hand over to CEO and CFO. That with regard to the relationship with the board, I'm happy to report that that has been finalized. We've resolved our issues, and I think we've settled down and are ready now to move forward. And then just to respond to a few of the issues around the funding model and an alternative funding model for us, maybe on your last question with regards to the percentage of our budget that is personnel, and I'm trying to link that as well to law enforcement and the need for the department to continue to fund us. You will note, and I'm sure CFO will confirm that, that of that 62%, it is heavily loaded with law enforcement personnel. And ideally, you want a situation in which self-regulation and a decrease of compliance with personnel being on the ground to happen in the country. But unfortunately, that is not currently happening. We are carrying that burden, which ideally should be a state burden. And we hope that that discussion would take place between the committee, would continue to assist us in that regard. The issue around the bait breach and the alternative models, again, that is in the strategy. We're currently working on fleshing out the various alternative models in the hope that we will come up with a final alternative model for funding for the CPRPA. Yes, indeed, it is untenable as it stands at the moment, even without the litigation aside. Just going forward, there are various challenges that we will have. And our success in one way could also be our Achilles heel if we are able to harmonize and get standardization of regulations across the corridors. That could impact on our permit income, which is what we are relying on. Can I hand over now to...
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to start with the Free State Lesotho matter. Indeed, there was a judgment. The operators, cross-border operators, took the Embassy for Transport, Roads and Police in Free State to court because of the
blockage that the embassy had instructed that closed the border and prevented these cross-border operators from being able to carry passengers to Lesotho. And the judgment was issued last month, and it was in the favor of the operators to say that the embassy had no right to block the operators from doing this. Now, the bigger question, of course, is what does that mean? What it means is that the minister has set up a ministerial task team to look into this matter. And in the task team, you have both the Department of Transport, National Department of Transport, the Free State Department of Transport, and cross-border represented in the task team. What we've done is we've reported on the outcomes of the court judgment to the task team, and we've requested that there must be a speedy meeting of the task team that so that we are able to then formally take a position on this, because it would not be right for the agency to make a pronouncement on this without ensuring that the embassy is on board in respect to whatever the pronouncement would be. The Department of Transport, of course, needs to provide guidance in this regard. The minister is of the view that once a court case has made a determination, ours is to comply. But I think, given the fact that there was a task team, we cannot be seen to have just acted unilaterally on this matter. So we haven't done anything as an agency. We are waiting for the guidance of the task team, because the minister has said at the time when the minister asked us to put a moratorium on the issuance of this permit, the minister said we will only change that position once the task team makes a determination that the environment or the situation has changed on the ground. So we are all awaiting a meeting of the task team and the MEC and the department, and we are all trying to convene urgently. Of course, there is a lot of pressure we are getting from the operators. I mean, every day, I believe the chairperson is also faced with a similar thing. We receive letters every day, we receive emails every day from operators, because you see, for these guys, it means money that is not coming to their pocket. Every day that passes without us resolving this issue, it means revenue lost to them. So there's a lot of pressure we're picking up from the industry. They're even lobbying all sorts of, they've now lobbied the newly appointed Minister of Transport of Lesotho to request a meeting with our own minister. On the plane last night as we were coming here, the minister was saying that she has received a request from the Minister of Transport of Lesotho for an urgent meeting. And it's these operators who actually are lobbying on all sides and so on. So as things stand, there is no, but it's clear which way it's going to go, but I'm not the one to make a pronouncement just on that issue. The second issue that was raised, of course, is the one of the SADC protocol issues. I think the Honourable Member is quite right in respect to us not always taking the responsibility of educating our taxi operators on what the provisions of these SADC protocols are. As a country, we do not operate in isolation. We operate governed by some international legal instruments that govern how we manage our relationship with our neighboring countries. And the things we do both at local level, at provincial level, and at national level need to be within these prescriptions. And sometimes we find that we do not always operate in accordance with this. I mean, the current manifestation of this is how we're actually treating foreign nationals in terms of, you know, and I don't want to get into that, but in the transport environment, this finds manifestation a lot. And partly is because of lack of knowledge and lack of appreciation that as a country we have obligations towards our neighbors who come here as operators or as passengers, as much as they have responsibilities on the other side. So a lot more needs to be done in terms of education campaigns, particularly in the taxi industry, the bus industry, and so on. But of course, there is also another side to this. And we should never really run the risk of only looking at one side of this issue. The other side of this is that there are adverse conditions that are also put on our own operators on the other side. So all parties, if I may put it that way, need to play their respective parts. Let me use Zimbabwe, for instance. Zimbabwe actually makes a lot of money out of our operators. It's no secret. In my view, I think it's quite deliberate, and it's almost something that is sanctioned at the highest level in government, that South African operators, they will create all plethora of regulations that are aimed at ensuring that they'll find something wrong with you, and then they can fine you, and so on. And I think for me, they are deliberately subsidizing their own deficits using us as operators. And as a country, it's about time that we also took it upon ourselves, you know, on a very, very serious way to raise these issues with our counterparts, not with a view to being negative, but with a view to say we need to balance the playing field. The other manifestation of this is where Zimbabweans come to South Africa and then somehow find South African citizenship and then come and apply for, I mean, we did an audit of the bus operators. 69% of cross-border operators that we have in our database are actually people of Zimbabwean origin. But somehow they've managed to become South Africans. When they come with a South African ID, there's nothing you can do. They apply for a permit. So they're actually playing on both sides. You come, in Zimbabwe, they are the operators. In South Africa, they are the operators. And when South Africans say, but this is not fair, they are not being, you know, it's not like it's not a legitimate, you know. Indeed, when you look yourself, you'll find that such a huge number of the people we issue permits to are actually Zimbabwean. But they are getting permits that would ordinarily have gone to South African operators. And really, it's really about balancing. And I all think it's about time we also became a little bit maybe jealous of our own assets, and we started really being balancing the playing field. And really, sometimes when you say these things, it sounds like you are being xenophobic or what, but this is reality. And insofar as this reality is creating a discomfort amongst our own people, it also leads to other problems that sometimes find wrong manifestations and so on. So these are some of the things on which we just need to balance the playing field, in my own view. On the issue of the need for the Act and regulations to change, yes, indeed, we are working on the change. The mandate, the minister has actually said that the mandate of the CBRCA and the Act are archaic. In 1998, when the CBRCA was established, government had a completely different set of strategic priorities from what we have. And therefore, agencies, and it's not just the CBRCA, all these entities that came into existence around 1998 and so on, it's about time that we reviewed our founding legislation to ensure, firstly, that do they fit in with the new imperative of creating a developmental space? And the kind of things we do, are they still in line with the imperative? I'll use an example. This thing of a 2-kilometer radius. Indeed, it's true that if you allow activities within the 2-kilometer radius of a border post, you create security challenges. But the reality is, in 9 out of 10 cases, we've been overtaken by events. We have taxi ranks built right within that 2-kilometer radius. Then it makes nonsensical of the law that says you shall not have taxi operations within the 2 kilometers of a radius of a border post, when in almost every border post you have taxi ranks within that 2-kilometer radius. So you have laws that have been overtaken by events, and we then need to make sure that we create the necessary alignment between what the law calls for and the reality on the ground. And again, the whole issue of how you regulate interprovincial movement and cross-border movement. Again, we need to really make sure that there's a closer alignment there. Where the situation dictates that people must drive within that 2-kilometer radius, because of their geographical situation, you can't have a law that makes this illegitimate when the geography dictates that these people need to be doing that. So for me, these are all some of these anomalies that need to be sorted out in terms of changing, amending the Act and ensuring that the Act speaks to the reality as it obtains on the ground, as opposed to just us pushing for things just because the Act says so. The other question that I think this was Honorable Mlauna covered, the court order issue, the update on the long-awaited court judgment. I've alluded to this one. The court judgment, that issue is now at the level of the Constitutional Court. It was heard at the Constitutional Court. We're all waiting. We were told that it will be between 3 weeks to 3 months before the judgment. And this was on the 7th of February when we were told. Till today, the Constitutional Court has not made a pronouncement on this. What I was flagging to the committee, though, was to say, if the judgment is upheld, then it renders us in an impractical, insolvent situation, because all of a sudden, we will have a debt of $366 million, which we don't have. If, of course, the judgment is favorable, then we only have an obligation of paying people $37 million, which we over-collected in any case. So that determination could have a vital impact on the survivability and the sustainability of this, even the mere existence of this entity. The minister has been sensitized about this. The minister has even had a discussion with the Minister of Finance on this question. What is not clear, though, is what's going to happen. If the judgment will come out tomorrow and the judgment will be at that, what would we do? We don't know. As I'm sitting here, I wouldn't be able to tell you what we would do. But we've done everything we could on our side to make sure that we sensitize the minister and ensure that the minister also sensitizes the Minister of Finance accordingly. The other question that was asked was in the situational analysis. We appreciate, Honorable Member, the compliments and respect to the situational analysis, and you are quite correct in saying that somewhere it seems like you know what's wrong, but you're not articulating the answers. For instance, the issue of branding and visibility. We had a branding strategy that we had developed as an agency of saying, how do you create the visibility and so on. When we received the cost of that strategy, given our current funding constraints, it became clear that much as we would like to enhance the visibility and the image of the CBRC, we simply can't afford to fund such things at this stage. You know, so you're basically saying, okay, we will attend to this thing in a piecemeal way, and maybe over time we'll enhance, but we are aware of what we need to be doing, but sometimes the very constraints from a funding point of view make it difficult for us to respond in an immediate way in terms of saying what are we going to do about it. I'm going to ask the CFO to speak to the issue of targets and where we have dashes and so on. I think there's a logical explanation to it, but maybe in the document it doesn't come up clear, and I'll ask the CFO to cover those. I thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Maybe let me just first address the issue that the citizen has raised and confirm that indeed, in terms of our staff and operating costs, I think the split in the main is informed by law enforcement that is currently sitting at 55% of the total payroll. So that is that. But we also, in the main, as I said, we are a civil organization, even advisory services and FIT, not operation. The issue that the CEO is raising or that was raised by the member in relation to the judges, we'll look at those, all of them, and take that as an input. But most of them were influenced by external dependencies. There are certain areas where we are doing a strategy. Some of them impact on the Act, the amendment of the Act. We are saying the implementation thereof will depend on the approval. So, but we can look at all of them and just make sure that we clarify them. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the questions that have been answered. Chairperson, I think for us, the comfort feeling that we really need to be getting is that from a legal point of view, the issue of Lesotho and the Free State presents a serious challenge for us, because legally they have won the case, and we as an agency are duty bound to issue them with the licenses. But there are other considerations where we can't do it. And we run the risk of another lot of litigation coming now from the Taxi Association. So that is a bit of a huge worry that we would really like to gain the assistance on this one. And with the issue of day breach and clarity with regard to who collects Sandran or ourselves, again, we would really appreciate the committee's assistance with that. Other than that, thank you very much. Over to you, Chairperson. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much, the CEO. Very, very urgent. The task team, when is it going to meet? I don't expect the minister to go and meet with the minister of Lesotho without necessarily having answers to some of the things, because they reside within probably the court judgment and how the lobby, that Mugwena is lobbying us very, very seriously. Hashtag that Mugwena. Take him back to CBRTA. But his concerns are very genuine. He's representing his members. And therefore, to me, we cannot continue to procrastinate and don't sit as a task team, because also the minister will need advice and guidance from the task team. Because now there are two critical things that the minister would want.
you should have advised him as to how to take the process forward, but you must also advise the minister on how to deal with this litigation as it is, because the operators have won the court case. Let's fast track. How long can it take for the team? And I'm also asking the acting DG as part of the task team. We don't have Free State here. We should be engaging all of you to say how long can it take. If the minister says she will be leaving at the end of this week, can we be able to guide the minister as a task team as to what is the approach going forward?
Thank you, Chairperson. This engagement ought to have happened already a week ago, but DG Sabisa was on leave. We now expect that we'll put this up as a matter of urgency to be engage with DG Sabisa and as the chairperson of the task team. So it should happen within this week. We should be able to come back with a response.
When is the DDG back? When can we be able to execute this task? Can we task you that the earliest within 24 hours we should be able to have this meeting going on?
Yes.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, Mr. Sabisa, DDG Transport, is scheduled to be at work tomorrow morning. So I will relay the message again this morning or tomorrow morning when he's in office. I also use the cell phone.
Maybe a question should be, you are active. What stopped you from executing this task?
Honourable members, the time for Mr. Sabisa in office is less than 24 hours. May I suggest that I relate this to him?
Can you answer the question?
Let's promise that we will do it this week.
I say you have been acting in the absence of Mr. Sabisa. What stopped you from executing the task?
It was not in my budget for the weekend.
What stopped the department from leading, because you are the leader of the task team, this the court judgment came out 3 weeks ago, to be precise. I was looking at it on my email, and until now we haven't done anything. We are not intending to act. We are waiting for Mr. Sabisa to come back. The minister has received an urgent invite across the borders. Is this how we should fail our government? It can't be.
We had a discussion about the matter on Sunday when we met the minister, and the department, of course, with that minister at that time. I know that the team involves other people. We have a view on how we are going to proceed. So generally, where the minister sits, she has a view of how we are going to approach the matter. But I'm not seeing why the meeting should not happen. I wouldn't know, Chairperson, about Dr. Mugwe as I'm sitting here, but I'm sure that other people would know. As I'm saying, give us the 48 hours to solve all both those issues. Because we want to also know those issues about Dr. Mugwe and what these issues are.
Simple. Tate Mukwena is the leader of the operators. He is talking on behalf of his members.
Some of them are still awaiting their licenses. Boroto Babana Babana was speech Mre. And therefore that is why he's interacting. All members of the committee, they receive almost every second day calls. I don't know about the CDRCA as to what exactly is happening in this regard. But this is trauma and torture to that person who actually depends on what you and me are doing for the sustainability of his service. Honorable student.
Chairperson, you are more than 100% correct. You see, what sometimes contributed to the challenges which we were experiencing in the past, that was consultation and communication. The chairperson was asking a simple question. That's the question which I've asked earlier on. How often do you meet with those people on the ground? Because if there are continuously meetings, it's easy to say to the chairperson, chairperson, we'll take the minister on board with 1, 2, 3. Chairperson, remember, that's why it's very difficult to go deep on this. It's better to bow down before you say something. But so, it's what whatever, it sounds like it's good. So, in which sense, you will correct your approach to the person to give the deadlines that by this time we need 1, 2, 3. But this one, it doesn't need 30 days of what? No, no. It must be maybe 7 days or 14 days. So that the, before the minister go there, the partners involved to be met. Because the argument, and also I think the reason why they won is in the case, it was because of our own structures. They don't meet. They don't meet. They don't treat each other. They were talking different languages while they are approaching the same operators. So those were the challenges in the past. Take it from there, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bush. And I think we need to be taken seriously. Last week we could not continue with the presentation because there was no representative from the department. Today we correctly have the 18 DG. But then we have the 18 DDG who is in place of Mr. Clarissa, who's on leave. And it means if you are acting on behalf of Mr. Clarissa, it means you have to do everything that is on his table if you are acting for that position. And we are not even Honorable Spande talking about outside people. We are talking about our own internal arrangement where the directorate or the program should have met with the CDRT to solve the issue. So, Chairperson, can we be taken seriously?
And Honorable Mraut.
Chairperson, I just want to make a follow-up, or did you, your office of Chairperson wrote the letter to the minister about this?
Yes, we have. Yeah. If Honorable Bushelo has really summed it up, the acting DDG and the acting DG take your SOEs very serious. Take them serious because they depend on, particularly as in this instance, obviously. Policies will have to be ratified in the department and they implement legislations and every other related thing. Take them serious and take this committee serious. Mure, guarantee the Mazoroka meeting and now I've put the gloves on. I can bruise to an extent that you don't even, we don't even pass this budget if you're taking us, you are doing things laser straight. Out of this, we can be able to paralyze the department if we don't pass the budget. Are you aware of that? Bona, they will continue with their work because they don't even depend on your budget for them to execute. But we can be able to do whatever we want to do as this committee if you think that we can do things in a laser Spanish manner and that you think we are here to play.
we're here to represent the people of the Republic of South Africa, and we cannot be taken for granted like that. It cannot be. It cannot be. I'm urging you that within the next 24 hours, by Thursday, you should have caused that meeting of the task team as a department, as a leader. You should have caused that meeting so that other entities should be able to know how to deal within the confines. By next week, Tuesday, we should have, as a committee, have received an indication that you have responded to the Democrat. You should have responded to the Democrat and asked you, what exactly, how are we taking the processes forward? Because it's going to be something that is very continuous, and in the end, in front of our communities, we look very clumsy. We've gone to Lesotho border because it was a pertinent thing that we had to do. We cannot, particularly at this era, where there is xenophobia, find ourselves saying, it was not on my agenda. What the hell is that? It wasn't on my agenda. Something very, very critical. You can't say that if you're serious about the lives of the people of the Republic and the lives of an African person. You can't say that. It wasn't on my agenda. Obviously, it will not be on your agenda because you are acting, but you take responsibility of the person you are acting on behalf of, that you should be able to execute that. Board members and the members of the CBRCA, thank you very much for the presentation. We are going to be following up this matter next week, Thursday. If anything has not come to our shores as a committee, we're going to write to the minister, we're going to write to the Speaker of Parliament, particularly on this matter, because it's a matter, remember, that involves the Prime Minister and the President of the Republic. If it has not been dealt with by next week, Thursday, we're going to write to the Speaker of Parliament that the Department of Transport is defying and undermining what the President has said last year when he was in Lesotho, together with the erstwhile Prime Minister of Lesotho. You cannot do that. You really can't do that. Disrespect the President. You can't do that. Not in my presence. Not while I'm still chairing this committee. You won't do that. Be rest assured that by next week, Thursday, if nothing comes to the shore, we are going to write to the Speaker of Parliament and complain. But we are also going to copy the minister this complaint that we are talking about. Thank you very much. The next one, before we go for lunch, will be Samsa. Is Samsa here? No, it's supposed to be Saka. Yeah. Samsa's time was taken because they were not here when we started. Saka. Thank you very much. Let's welcome Saka. Sorry, Bobby and your team that you have, sorry, Chapter and your team that you have been here to listen to what comes from this, my mouth. Hold it to my heart and hold it in high esteem because that was what we say, South Africa, taking South Africa forward, working within and amongst our communities. That's how I put it, that's how I tell it. Welcome Chairperson, welcome CEO, welcome Team Saka. And we're not going to be wasting time because we have run out of time. I've vented what the venom that was in me. It's been coming, and at least somebody gave me an opportunity of doing that. And I do it unrehearsed, by the way, when I do it. But you're welcome. I'm going to give it to the chairperson to present the stress plan. And obviously, I know that not yourself per se, but your team will be your team will be able to do that, and will take matters forward. We know that we don't have issues. My issue is that you do not communicate the good work that you are doing. That is my issue. And I can take you to the washer just on that. Communication. But what is very critical is that we should be able to say the good things that are happening in the Republic. Let the people of the Republic, let the people of the world know that there are good public servants and there are good SOEs that are doing good work out there. I've said this to ATNL, I've said this to AXA. I'm saying it to yourself to say you've got a weakness of communicating. Every time I go into the SAA, I look at the Sawubona magazine. Every time I go into SA Express, I look into Indre. Every time I go into Airlink, I look at their magazines. I look at every magazine and say, you're trotting the world. We should be seeing your things, very good work that you're doing in almost all these magazines so that people can be able to know. Sometimes one day when you have money, you are able to fill the Sunday newspapers with all the good things of the cadets that we have seen. Just advertise, put the pictures of those young boys and girls who are doing engineering, aeronauticals, pilots. Just throw them out so that people can be able to see. It will also encourage those up and coming other ones who would want to follow the footsteps of these ones that they have seen. So this is in essence what I'm trying to say. So Soweto TV would really want to hear your good story. And other TVs that are here in the Republic, they would want to hear your good story. And probably even the SABC and all these other TVs, they would want to really hear the good stories of the good people who are making the Republic South, the Republic of the South Africa proud. So, Chairperson, right on, brother.
Chair, you are the tailwind behind the plane. So we will certainly sail as fast as possible so that we can gain time. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members, our colleagues from the Department of Transport, in particular the SEDDG, colleagues from other state-owned entities, good afternoon. Before I proceed, I would like to introduce the team. My name is Simonda Mukwena. I'm the chairperson of the SACA board, effective set of...
I was not referring to you when I was talking to you at the Mukwena.
Now that you're saying it, I was falling asleep. Smunda Mukwena, and then on my right is Bopi Khoza. Ms. Bopi Khoza is the Director of Civil Aviation, otherwise CEO. On my left is the CFO, Mr. Ashraf Sidat. On my far left is our strategy and executive who assists us in development of the strategic plan, Mr. Spellon Elder. So, Chair, essentially, the three of us will be making the presentation, and when necessary, we may recall other resources to assist. First of all, let me apologize, Chairperson, in that I provided leadership to this presentation very late. As a result, there are news lines which are not in front of you, and for that I apologize profusely. In fact, your comment about communicating the good work is part of me providing guidance to add some good work that we are doing. Those are the issues that one is going to be addressing. As I said, I will be assisted by the DCA and the CFO. I will spend some time on elaborating on our regulatory architecture insofar as relates to our mandate, and then go into the strategic goals, and then the CEO will take from there. And out of the strategic thrust that we have identified, we thought perhaps we should hone in into one transformation, and then we'll deal with the issues of finance going concern and the allies and some challenges, and then conclude. Chair, the mandate of SACA is predicated on two pillars. The one pillar is that of complying with international civil aviation security and safety standards as established by the International Civil Aviation Organization and our legislation, which is the Civil Aviation Authority Act of 2009. And there we're just reflecting what are the objectives of the Act, essentially to control and regulate the civil aviation safety and security in South Africa. So that is essentially our mandate. And of course, oversee the implementation and compliance to the National Aviation Security Program, oversee the functioning and development of the civil aviation industry, and of course, promote it as well. And the other areas, of course, are dealt with by other stakeholders in the country, such as the minister. I think I just alluded to the fact that on the one hand, we put an international standard as outlined by ICAO. On the other hand, we put legislation. I've just given you a flavor of legislation. However, in terms of the two areas that we look at, there's what we call a critical element of state safety oversight system. South Africa is a member state of ICAO. As a result, it subscribes to certain conventions that have been established by ICAO. And we are from time to time assessed in terms of compliance of these elements. And we also indicate as well that with regard to the United States, we are also assessed in a manner in such a way that we are able, when we reach a certain grade, to fly to and fro United States. I think the easy thing to compare with is the credit rating. The agencies, your Standard and Poor's, your Fitch, and if they put you at a certain grade, they won't give you a loan. But if you are triple A, positive outlook, they can give you anything. So this also applies here. If you fall between a certain rating, you may not, aeroplanes that come from this country may not go to the United States. And those elements, Chair, there's eight of them. And they make logic sense, because first of all, they say there must be a rule of law. In other words, there must be primary aviation legislation. And secondly, it says that there must be regulations and policies and standards emanating from there. And then thirdly, it says there must be a regulatory body in that environment. And also it talks about the procedures and tools that you use for technical personnel and qualifications and training. And it goes on like that. That's a framework that should be there, that should be established, and the implementation thereof. That's when you go to critical elements 6 to 7. I will not go into this one, Chair, but as you indicated, there's a safety element, and this is a security element. The elements are more or less the same. Same to say that this address the security element. And I here use the program as indicated there, USAP, to assess the compliance of the state to this element. Now, Chair, just very briefly, in terms of our strategic plan, what I would like just to point out, because this processes may take one form of the other, particularly everybody would do a situational analysis. But in our case here, we went further, Chair, to engage, you know, the industry through surveys, and we've also engaged the employees as part of the situational analysis, which is there. But secondly, what we want to point out here is that we've taken the national imperatives into consideration, such as your national development plan, your NGPs, the state of the nation address, and more importantly, of course, the areas that the department needs to address, the national outcomes as per the Department of Transport. Chair, our mission is to regulate the industry in support of sustainable development of the aviation industry. That is our mission. And we have a dream, Chairperson. And that dream is to say by 2020, if you count the top 10 aviation authorities in the world, South Africa is there. CAA is there. That's our vision, Chair. This is very bold in that visions normally don't have such strict targets, but this one has got a target that is quantifiable. So if we are not there by 2020, that means we'll fail. What we promise you, Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee and the public at large, that we will keep you safe in the sky. That's our grand promise. Now, in terms of our value, Chairperson, which we coined an acronym, GIST, we say good is never good enough. Integrity is one of our values. Service delivery ahead of the customer's expectation, and ensure that we partner and have a teamwork with the stakeholders in the industry. And as I said, we acronymed it CHIS. Moving forward here to the 7 strategic thrusts, in the order of priorities, I would invite members to start from the right and top corner and move clockwise. First of all is that, and these strategic thrusts has been developed and ranked in the order of priority. Our first priority or our first strategic thrust is to regulate the aviation industry in compliance with the Act and, of course, as I indicated, the ICAO, the Safety and Security Standards. The second one, Chair, is to accelerate the aviation industry transformation, and that's why we chose it, just to elaborate a little bit on it, the slide, the DCA
will give us the details. The third strategic structure is to propose to government legislative review and governance arrangements. Regulators anywhere in the world, because they are where the rubber hits the touch at the coal face, one of their functions is to review and advise. So we are of the view that we need to advise on the amendment of the Act, particularly where it lacks on governance issues. We will certainly take this up as time progresses to advise the department and the minister accordingly, because it is a matter that has to be done in order for the regulator to function optimally. The way this regulator is structured in terms of the Establishment Act is very unusual, and therefore that needs to be corrected. The fourth point, Chair, has to do with the financial sustainability. It does seem, or it is like this, that most of the funding, the revenue of the regulator, do arise from the passenger safety charge, and obviously if that is the case, it depends on the economy. When the economy go up, it's proven that the flying around increases. When it goes down, obviously that fee goes down as well. But here there are two elements to this. One element is to ensure that we improve and enhance the current collection of whatever is due to the regulator and collect it in time. If it is not collected in time, impose the necessary penalties that are there. Because I'm told that the few years one airline, low cost airline, went down, and it went down with our money. So that's improving the efficiency of collection. But the other element, of course, is to explore other areas of bring revenue that we will develop as we proceed, and obviously approach the relevant and competent authority to deal with this. The fifth element, Chair, has to do with the significantly improved client service experience. SAFA, unlike the regulators that I work at, has got quite a huge, shall I say, client or customer base. There's always movement around the building, and just to hand them licenses or to test them is not good enough. We need to have that human touch. That's the point we are making here, and we need to improve that. Driving organizational efficiency and effectiveness, there are certain elements there that we like to ensure the economics and the location of the organization, the structure, and so on. Those things we are looking at. And finally, Chair, we want to improve our communication and stakeholder engagement. As you rightly said up front, you can see it's one of the strategies. Obviously, that one stretches throughout the others. Chair, this is the point where I'm going to ask the DCA to take over and to start telling you that we are relevant in terms of, we are aligned in terms of the national objective.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the honourable members of the committee, the senior officials of the department, and officials from our country. Here it is to demonstrate the alignment
of our strategic deliverables to the national goals. The chair gave us a roadmap in terms of the strategy process. We've identified four elements in the national development plan which we thought were quite close to the organizational goals or what we aspire to achieve. Coupled with that, we also looked at the DOT outcomes and we've tried to create an alignment between the National Development Plan, the DOT outcomes, as well as the organizational goals. The chairman has already outlined the seven organizational goals which we are going to preoccupy ourselves in the next few years, starting from this financial year. With respect to the strategic objectives, the left hand will elaborate the seven strategic goals that the chairman has articulated on them. But what is of interest, Chairperson, is that there is a fair balance in the distribution of the strategic objectives. If you look at the core mandate, we have quite a bulk of strategic objectives, the things that you want to deliver in the next few years, as well as the issues of organizational efficiency. So that balance is very important because it says we are taking both elements of organizational efficiency as well as the core mandate because of the interdependencies between the two into account. And we are saying we don't want to excel in aviation safety and security and leave out other efficiencies, the efficiency issues. In fact, it's a hand-in-the-glove type of an approach. If I may start with the first one, which is regulate aviation industry in compliance with the Act and ICAO, the five strategic objectives that we have identified, the first one being we want to achieve a step change in regulating aviation safety and security. We are saying gone are the days when ICAO announces that they are coming to do an assessment. We run around trying to pass emergency regulations and so forth. We're saying we need to take a proactive approach. At any given point, even if ICAO says I am coming to audit next month, we must always be ready. We also want to enhance our enforcement to encourage self-reporting. We would like to revise and implement the cross-functional accident reduction plan, which is aimed at reducing the accident rate, especially in the general aviation sector. In the last 3 months, the last quarter of January to March, we are seeing a drastic decrease in the general aviation accidents. And we think that part to that, although we haven't really done a scientific study, is because of the collaborative efforts between ourselves as a regulator and the industry towards reducing accidents. And we'd also like to perform our oversight activities in a manner that we ensure that there's adequate coverage. Any operator that we've licensed, we must at least visit two or three times in a year to make sure that the upkeep of standards is always at a level which we desire. We also want to fast-track the implementation of the environmental regulation. That regulation is currently at the Department of Transport, is submitted to the Ministry, and is under consideration. As soon as the Minister pronounces herself on the piece of regulation, we want to start with the implementation as quickly as possible. And that is to deal with the issues of carbon emissions, noise emissions, as well as issues of air quality. On strategic goal number two, accelerate aviation industry transformation, we've maintained level two triple BE rating, and we want to maintain that with a view of attaining level one in the next 5 years. But we think that with the introduction of the new codes, it will be important that we don't drop to a level below, but to maintain this and achieve more. As well as to implement the SACAR specific aviation industry transformation strategy deliverables. Under the in consultation and under the guidance of the Department of Transport, we recently concluded on the aviation industry transformation strategy, and it was approved by the board just last month. And therefore, there will be processes in terms of how best do we then implement the strategy such that we realize the transformation level that you want to see. with respect to the third strategic goal, that is proposed legislative review and governance arrangements. I think the chairperson, yes, chairman of the board, has articulated on this matter around the issues of amending the act to be in line with the Public Finance Management Act, as well as to ensure that we strengthen all governance arrangements between institutions involved. On the issue of securing financial sustainability, the chairman also touched on it to say we want to diversify and expand our revenue source, as well as to introduce cash mitigation reserve to secure funding and for growth. On the issues of improving client services, we want to significantly improve customer experience. As the chairman has indicated, we are a unique regulator in that we are a service industry as well as a regulator at the same time. So one or the other, the issues of customer services, they need to be elevated. On driving organizational efficiency and effectiveness, we have started a process of reviewing the organizational structure, which has concluded last month. The board approved or pronounced in its collective wisdom the structure that is poised to take the Civil Aviation Authority into the future. And we want to intensify on the issues of the culture of performance, the issues of robust performance management system, as well as the implementation of the electronic business system, which will assist a great deal in terms of our performance. We also want to enhance the skills capacity. What we're saying is that because we are a regulator, we regulate the industry. At any given point in time, our skills capacity level, they should be on par or above the industry average. So when we were very keen in terms of ensuring that our personnel are skilled to the level of on par and above the industry. We also want to look for a permanent home for Saka. We are currently leasing two buildings at Waterfall Park at a huge cost. And ideally, instead of paying rent on a monthly basis to a landlord, it would be good to explore many other options in terms of how best to secure a permanent home for Saka. And that is on track. We are in negotiation with the National Treasury in terms of giving us guidance on the process steps that must be followed in order for us to realize the relocation. We are also engaging our sister companies who have land to say how best can they borrow us land so that we can build the offices. We also want to acquire an ICT infrastructure to support the new Saka business design, in particular with the current and the new. So we want to elevate the issues of ICT such that it becomes an enabler in our oversight system. Improve communication and stakeholder management. The chairman has said a mouthful in terms of us significantly improving on our stakeholder engagement as well as communication. We are also saying, because in terms of the state performance to the International Civil Aviation Organization, we are above the threshold of 80% as required by ICAO. ICAO advocates that if your state is above 80% mark, you should begin to engage in the programs where you give assistance to other states. At this point in time, we are assisting about 10 states, with Sierra Leone coming on board next month. We are assisting those states to resolve the significant safety concerns as identified by the International Civil Aviation Organization. And I think that program is progressing very well. Chairperson, with regard to the new CAA organogram, as I've indicated, that the board, who is competent in pronouncing on the high-level structure of the entity, has pronounced on the structure that is poised to take us towards the ranking, that would be our vision of being the top 10 civil aviation authorities in the world. Structures in any nature are not cast in stone. They are never perfect, but we think that with the structure as slighted on the screen, it will certainly take us to the next level. Chairperson, I'm going to go on the transformation, particularly the SACA. This is the slide that will not be in your pack, as the chairman had apologized. In terms of the makeup of the male demographics, we are not doing very well in that we have not met the target, although our employment equity plan is for 3 years. So we do trust that by the end of 2018, we should have met and exceeded the targets in as far as male demographics is concerned. Some of the factors that has created a situation where our male demographics are below target is because aviation is a male-dominated environment, and as such, even the Civil Aviation Authority, in the past few years, the makeup of the inspectorate in particular, as well as management, has been by and large occupied by white males. And as they exit the system through retirement or other reasons, we then begin to see that when it comes to the Balancing Act, in terms of the current staff complement and where we aspire to go, we seem to have slept behind. But the employment equity plan, as we implement it, should be able to assist us to fast track the achievement of that. Although the margins are not too big, for instance, if you take the African males, currently we have about 152, and our target is 158. So we have made quite significant progress, but we have not reached our target. With respect to the female demographics, we seem to have done fairly well on African females in particular, with where we have exceeded the target 171 currently, and our target was 162. Where we're not doing very well is in the colored community, Indian, and then the white, it's just by a margin. But as we implement the employment equity plan, we are closely monitoring this figure. With respect to the industry transformation, it's one of our strategic goals as well, but we thought we wanted to show the slide, just zooming into the pilot community. We still have a challenge on this one, Chairperson, but we think that with the newly developed transformation strategy, as we implement it, we should begin to see the movement. Although there's been a slight growth compared to 2013, we still have a long way to go in terms of transforming the industry. And it's a collaborative effort between the Department of Transport, other relevant government departments, the industry, as well as the state-owned entities to assist in changing the picture. Some of the transformation initiatives, Chairperson, that we have implemented, we have spoken about the industry-wide transformation strategy, which was concluded just last month, or in the previous financial year. SACA, by and large, represents a fairly transformed organization, save those areas where, as we implement the employment equity plan, shall be addressed as we go along. We are continuing with the aviation or career awareness program. We've visited about 452 schools. I couldn't list all of them, but the information can be provided to the committee if required to demonstrate which schools we have visited, especially the rural areas. We are providing bursaries to students. We currently have 8 who are training to be pilots, and they're all females, 11 who are studying aircraft mechanics, and they've all completed their first year and they've progressed to the next level. And we are increasing the bursaries team to also attract. Conundrum is that we are a regulator and we are self-funded. Our funds are very limited. We would have loved to increase the budget to accommodate more, but the little that we do, we think it demonstrates enough that we are trying to deal with the issues of transformation in the best possible way. Chairperson, I'm going to hand over now to the CFO to briefly take us through to the CAA going concern in terms of the finances. CFO. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good afternoon, members of the Portfolio Committee. If you look at the SACA financial performance, it derives 75% of its income from passenger safety charges. That amount is made up from the number of passengers that travel as well as the travel. The other 25% comes from user fees and fuel levy. What you can see in the graph is that in the current year we start to see some growth in passenger numbers compared to the previous 2 years. The previous 2 years we saw very little growth or decrease compared to the 2011-2012 financial year. In the current financial year, the passenger numbers have increased by 1.5% when you compare this year with the previous year. We expected no growth basically in our budget, so it has contributed to our financial performance. The other issue that I want to highlight is that the re-emergence of the low-cost airlines is also going to contribute, it's starting to contribute to the passenger numbers as well. So it's looking positive for us in terms of the revenue streams and the going concern issue going forward. Hopefully that trend will continue into the future. If you look at our budget for the 2015-2016 financial year, we're budgeting total revenue of 497 million. That revenue is coming from two sources. One is the growth in the passenger numbers of about 1.5% that we've budgeted, and then also the tariff increase. We've budgeted for tariff increases of about 6%, close to the CPI. The total revenue for 2015-16, we're expecting it to grow by 9.9%. If you look at staff-related costs, which amounts to 366 million, and then non-staff costs is 130 million, which is not a significant portion. We are budgeting for a break-even budget in the MTF period, in terms of the PFMA.
What I'd like to point out, and I've challenged my colleagues, if you look at this slide, we're a regulator, we're a Schedule 3A public entity, so we don't earn profits, but there's this fancy word I use in government, surplus and loss. Now, the danger with those zeros, Chair, is that you don't have a reserve. What about if there's a delay or there's a default in payment of the passenger charges? Then you have a problem. You can't pay employees. What other regulators do, they apply to the National Treasury for what we call cash flow mitigation reserve, or like a buffer of 3 months. So that should there be a delay in payments, then at least you can still run the organization operationally, only operationally, no other costs involved. So that's the point we were making there, that we would have to develop a conversation with our policy, our policy department, with regard to that particular area. As I indicated, I'm told that one low-cost online went down or was liquidated, and it was liquidated with the debt of how much?
19 million
is a lot of money. So that's the point I wanted to make, this year.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm taking the floor once again for the last line. Just to briefly give the organizational highlights to date, we are still a best performing institution in transport until October. And the AG Award for clean auditing two years in succession, we trust that perhaps when the AG is currently busy with the audit and we are crossing our fingers that we'll get another one for the third year in succession. Our ICAO compliance is indeed above 80%, and we are dealing with the 20% remainder through a corrective action plan, which we have communicated to ICAO via the Department of Transport. The chairman highlighted the issue of the U.S. Auditing South Africa. This audit happens on a yearly basis. The last one did not register any findings. We still enjoy the exemption from the European Union on air cargo issues, in that we do not get these restrictive measures for implementation, which come at a cost, because the EU, European Union, is fairly comfortable that our regulatory systems are commensurate with their own. Recently, South Africa was appointed as the chair of the Aviation Security Panel, which is an ICAO panel. The regional cooperation, as I indicated earlier on, that we are assisting quite a number of states, with Sierra Leone coming in May, which will be state number 10 on the list. So those are the organizational highlights. I'm handing back to the chair.
Yes, Chair, the finally the bridge that we need to cross, but these are not the insurmountable, because we do try to manage them. At the moment, we are, shall I use the word struggling, DCA, that to conclude a labor recognition agreement, because the previous one had its own issues in terms of it never had a review date, but nonetheless it's overtaken by certain provisions in the Labor Relations Act. So there are certain issues that have come up that has delayed the conclusion of a labor recognition agreement. As honorable members, you would know, it's fairly easy to negotiate with an organized party rather than all over the place. Such negotiations are still taking place, and of course certain events have also caused these delays. The review of legislation and addressing governance issues, I think I've addressed this point quite at large in the beginning, in that we need to find some harmony in the interim, but in the long term, obviously, our view is the amendment of the Act. There is a strong need to aggressively pursue this whole question of revenue enhancement. As I indicated, for me, where I'm sitting, I'll split it into three areas. The first area is to make sure, just like what SARS did a few years ago, all they did first was to make sure that those who are liable to pay must pay. And if they don't pay, there must be penalties. That's number one. Number two is that, oops, the money is not enough. Where can we find other taxpayers? Then they expanded the tax base. We also want to explore making sure that we address the tax work, or rather the revenue source. And finally, of course, like I indicated, to address that issue of cash mitigation reserve. In conclusion, we do have a strategy that is in place and has been duly submitted to our executive authority. And all the risks that have been identified, we have what we believe a solid strategic risk register. And as part of aspiring to be the top 10, Chair, we have embarked on the organizational redesign process. that we can share if required at a later stage. And we stand ready to ensure that we support the department and the minister and obviously ultimately the portfolio committee and the legislature. We thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Daten Kwena. Not the hashtag one. Colleagues, there we are. Can we keep ourselves without preambles, go directly to the questions? If that's the Linda. Straight, I commit with the Honorable Mlausi, Honorable Sibande, Honorable Bushir.
Thanks, and thanks for the presentation.
Maybe before, Datetwa, how far is progress with respect to the review of the legislation?
Thank you, Chair. The legislation is with the Minister for approval so it can go to that leg and cabinet committees.
In your absence, I was asking where is Mabiti? When you are abroad, we had very critical issues. We are here to help the department, not to find ourselves at loggerheads with the department. And I think one honorable member, if my memory serves me well, said social or societal entities such as NEPLEC were available to can be able to assist in terms of making sure that we prospect some of the things that we don't see, we are not seen to be hampering the good work that entities may be doing, because when you look at the 20% that they are talking to, are 20% shortfalls within ICAO issues which have got to do with legislative and legislation from within the Republic of South Africa. So I would urge you that clearly try and work on that matter so that it gets easily fast tracked. I've said I don't want anybody to hear the venom. It's done. Please help me to do not to take it out. Honorable Mlausi.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yeah, my appreciation is the financial and the previous audit reports, which are clean, hoping for the third one, which is very good. And the transformation about to empower the youth, schooling and everything is a good move for what we're doing. But, however, I think you must maybe draft something, maybe writing, detailing the names of the school, the areas you are spreading these banners and MOBs, students and everything, and write it to the HFS in writing, so that we must know which area you cover, because we will just say this transformation is done only to find that maybe it's only on the side of the country, not countrywide. As we said, as the chairperson said, that most of the things, people that don't know about this good thing because it's not communicating to the entire government. And the last thing is about your organization, your org structure. I think it would be very good if you can put it with the from the CEO, also draft it to show that the CEO report to the board to the minister. And your org is only about you. So it's a living document, it can be challenging court and everything like that. To put it clear that you are the entity under the Department of Transport. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, you see, yes, Chairperson, because mine is the one who started with about this thing of regulations, whatever. You see, there's this thing which is worrying me about the time frames, whereby maybe the entity itself it take long to submit what they're supposed to submit while they run in terms of protocol. I mean, all these phases which are supposed to take place, that's where the problem is. And then the thing is, you see, I don't know, man, I was asking myself why they decided to take cause they need to lead as woman, because I was coming to that kind of transformation. I don't know for how long we are singing the same song since we started here about issue of Kobo, the Congress of Boys only, in terms of transformation. I don't know whether are they taking us serious when we talk about transformation, because it's very wrong to sing the same song. Remember, we started last year. We don't want to regret our attempts, because it's not a compromise. It's there that we must transform. You indicated about the issue of white male dominating, whatever. That must be corrected. And then also, you see, because that one, it goes with the compliance, nothing else. The government of the day need you to comply. That we requested long ago to each and every one of us that we need women to be there. The issue of my colleagues in terms of transformation, in terms of schools, is correct, but I don't know whether your program, you cover all the provinces. Because that's another program, whereby the focus of the good work which you are doing is only focusing in the metro. So that is worrying me. And then you see also what you referred to about what is worrying me. You made a correct example about one airline which was liquidated with more than 19 million threats. The issue is one, what caused it is the issue of risk management. Whether do you have a risk management? Because, I mean, to you now, this question is posed to you, not the people who already been liquidated. Because some of this is why they are happening. They are happening because sometimes we don't have risk management. Because risk management is, they are there as an alarm to send a red signal that something is coming. This must be addressed, this is not done. Do you have a risk management? Who constitutes it this way? Most of the time when we ask the question of the risk management, when we ask who constitutes it, most of the time they tell us that yes, we do have, but we don't get the answer who constitutes it. Because also it's very much important. Some of the people are not involved. And then also, Chairperson, I was happy, Chairperson of the Board, when you were raising the thing, when you promised us, when you, about, unfortunately for stars, like somewhere they do have numbers, somewhere they don't have numbers. When you were talking about the coil, and also you promised us about the safety of our head. But to me, sometimes I can put it another way around. That is not yet kind of person. You know why it is, but maybe cover you or some entities. Because in South Africa, we still have what we call, I'm just making an example, some of this small lending strip, which doesn't account to you, which you don't even know about the movement. You're not sure about the movement, of which they form part of the security risk. I'm happy somehow it came some few days ago that they form part of the security risk, this small lending strip. Because what I believe, Chairperson, if the entities, all of them, they can assist us, maybe to make some proposal about this small lending strip so that amicable solution can be done, or a law must be produced in order to produce that, to stop them. But as long as they are there, you can have your assurance assured by USA, what, but practically, not monitoring those things who are coming out, who's coming in and who's leaving. And then also somewhere there, you talk about improvement of the communication and stakeholder engagement. You see, Jefferson, there's this thing also which is worrying me. How do you market yourself to the people so that they know what? Because to me as a chairperson, I mean, in the portfolio committee, I might understand what you mean about this, civil aviation authority. But to the ordinary people, you know why I'm raising the chairperson? In order to market yourself, to get more students to go to that level, to take that course. Because you won't get people to go at school to train or whatever, if they don't know anything, if there's no motivation. For example, you made an example that you have won whatever it might be, but it's known to you, to us not known. It exposes that you can't even market yourself. At the end, you can't even highlight some of your achievements. You're not highlighting them. You have achieved something which is recognized internationally, but you don't take it to the people. We don't know about it. That is the fact. And the chairperson, let me leave it there, maybe my colleagues will come. But lastly, this one of accelerate aviation industry transformation is dead. But by when? Because you have to accelerate it. It's very broad. Maybe not now, as my colleague says, requested that something must be submitted to the chairperson's office, so that if you are failing, if there are challenges, we can intervene and assist. Thank you very much,
Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I think firstly, let me commend SACA for the good work that they're doing. I think some of us were fortunate to come down and see exactly how you're contributing to that, and I would like to thank you and urge you to keep up. My worry is, like as my colleague has said, you're not communicating enough what you're doing. And we're saying to ATNS, you know, you see this almost every other day, aircraft are having accidents in other countries. But because you are there in ATNS and others, you know, you don't experience those kind of problems. And it's because you are doing your job and making sure that the aircraft follow safety measures and regulations that you put in place. You are not assuring South Africans that, you know, we have better systems to be able to do that. So sometimes you must blow your own horn, you know, but also you'll be educating our members of the public. You know, today our skies are saying we're trying to do that in our own space to show that, but I think also as SACA we need to do that. When we hear this aircraft falling and everything, the first reaction is I'm not going to fly anymore. You know, that's the first. And while you are in that mode, somebody must come and assure you to say, you know what, in terms of our skies in South Africa, this is and all. So I think we need to communicate more in a simpler language that they will be able to understand. I think the second one, Chair, will be on the issue of the regulation and the legislation. I know when you were there, you informed us how urgent you need some regulation and some legislation. I just want to find out how far you, whether you are still waiting for the department or the department is waiting for you, because we got the impression that you need them in urgency. And then the last one, I think, is you need to maybe increase your also stakeholder relations. I think the chair would know. I wrote it on my wall some other time, praising SACA of the good work and everything. and the party popper just came, Greg, and said, but those people are mismanaging the entity. They don't talk to aircraft manufacturers. They're making it impossible for people to work, you know, and come with all those accusations. But when you try to say, but what did they do so that you can raise the issue? You know, it's just general. Then you can just see that not necessarily that people have problem. Maybe it's their problem, they don't comply or whatever. But I'm saying, like, they call themselves aircraft. Aircraft owners and others. I think they've got a bone to chew. I'm not getting it. But I think as we reach them out, because we can't let them be our party. You're doing a good job, and we know you're doing a good job. So you need to maybe to strengthen this stakeholder relationship issue and be able to assist in that regard. But all in all, I'm happy to what is going on in SACA.
Thank you very much, honorable members, CEO, Chairperson of Board. I'm going to give you 5 minutes to respond to the issues. Those that might not have been able to respond to, you can, within 48 hours, send the responses to the committee secretary. But from my side, as has been indicated, I started earlier with the critical thing, which to me is communication, that the more you communicate, the more it becomes better for people to understand the subject matter, because Honorable Michelle is indicating, despite the fact that there were those who were rubbishing what we're talking about when we talk to issues of SACA, ACTA, ATNS, and so forth and so forth, there are those who don't even know what exactly are we talking about. Much as you would put the acronyms and also put the name in full, they don't have an idea as to what is civil aviation doing. And therefore, it tells you that you need to really give yourself time. I don't think a chairperson of the board, it will be very expensive if you go to this radio station. Even if you can just release a press statement when you come out of here, as SACA, that we have made a presentation to a portfolio committee and send it to all the newspapers. I'm telling you, the people who are yearning for news are community radio stations. You will be inundated with calls from community radio stations wanting you to explain what exactly is your portfolio or spouse, and so forth and so forth. So your communications person is very central to can be able to do some of this work. But also give yourself time to just go into some of these community radio stations. You take one in the Eastern Cape, all the provinces have got community, almost every town has got a community radio station. You talk to the issues, you talk to your vision, you talk to your mission. You talk to legislative issues. It not only will it assist the learners, but it also assists other people who may not be having knowledge in terms of the work that you're doing. Because you're not operational here in the Republic of South Africa only, but you're operational international. You win international awards. You're able to explain, these are the awards that you have won because these are the things that you are doing. You know, you have spoken to issues of the environment. You start elaborating as to what are the issues that, when you talk to issues of environment, what does that really mean? Because people think of the environment, when you talk to people on environmental issues, they will tell you about COP17. They don't know anything other than that. So these to me are very critical things. But the vacancy at the executive management level is too much. Hopefully you should be able to, when we come to deal with the other quarters as we go into this, it will be a thing of the past, because as I was looking through your organizational structure here, I see several vacancies which actually needs to be filled here. So I'm going to be giving you just a very chairperson, and then we'll adjourn for lunch. Can we agree that we will adjourn for 30 minutes? 15 minutes, will it be okay? 30 minutes? 30 minutes, okay, fine. And the temperature.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the questions and for the guidance provided, particularly with the respect to showing the executive authority on top of the board so that it is clear that it's a government. The other issues, Chair, we will certainly provide. I just want to comment on two issues. Of my appetite to make sure that people are getting paid so much. The issue of revenue enhancement, really. I think we do have the strategic register that addresses this. In my previous life, what I've seen, if businesses are not codified and agreed with the industry, these whole things may be a problem. So part of the issue is really qualify and agree with the industry that this is how we're going to work with regards to collecting our money, so that if they default, then they default on the contract. The second issue I want to comment on, Chair, is that of the industry. I mean, the transformation. What you're saying is that SACA is up there up front, is achieving its target, though marginally low, but we are achieving. What is problematic is the industry. And from my near assessment, having been here since October, some of these impediments and constraints are explicitly contained in this legislation. Because in essence, the industry is running itself. I can even make a statement to say that, you know, the people that are out there make things in such a way that whoever is there cannot effectively make things to change. That's part of the problem. People may not see it, but it is there. I mean, you have a committee, for instance, Chair, if I may just use an example. You have a committee that makes regulations. That committee does not take those regulations to the board. They go straight to the minister. I've never seen a regulator that doesn't assist the policymaker to draft regulations. So how do you transform such an industry? So for where I'm sitting here, I'm saying it's a long haul. It will need a number of things. And that is why we say specific to SACA, we need to make a contribution. But there, all other players, under the guidance, of course, of the Department of Transport, but it's not going to be a fairly long one in terms of transforming this industry. I mean, you'd recall, Chair, I mean, when I first started on the mines, I mean, it was clear a black man could not have a platinum certificate. How would you then transform when it's in the act? Because otherwise we'll be breaking the act. I'm not saying this act is as worse as that, but they are implied constraints in there. That's all I'm saying.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the guidance and the question. I think perhaps the presentation would not have covered many other areas, but we are happy to provide within 48 hours clarity on issues such as the school that we visited, as I indicated, that we can make those details available, and the makeup in terms of the bursary distribution to our learners. I know the portfolio committee did see them, and also we saw the distribution in terms of the demographics, but in writing we can also provide refreshed information, because we've taken on quite a few. With the issue relating to whether the entity is not delaying progress for legislation, I can confirm that the entity does not, because we have provided the department on time, if not in advance, our comments in terms of what how we want to do that process that the DDG has elaborated is what we know as progress in terms of the other steps that have to be followed. But indeed, our comments were made available to the department. I think, Chairperson, we can then give a written response on other matters, including the issue that was raised by the Honourable Member on the regulation around the landing strips, some that are unaccounted for. Some of those issues are multi-jurisdictional because there's intelligence involved, there's the Air Force, there's it's many other entities, but we can provide in terms of what is it that we have done to date in terms of crafting regulations that will assist in that respect. On communication, Chair, when you visited SACA, you made these comments around our marketing, and I can assure the committee that immediately after, we then regrouped and came up with a plan. Unfortunately, we could not implement in those few months because of budget issues, but we've made substantive budget in our allocation for this financial year. And the plan is to kick off as of next month. And you should have watched this space. Thank you.
Thank you very much, colleagues. You're all invited for lunch. 30 minutes. It's your job now. Let's be back half past.
In fact, they go to the extent of saying that they is provided actually government. For purposes, but for purposes of classifying this is government.
Okay, madam, all right, how do we look at like approximately, Mr. Rinder?
Yeah.